Hi, I'm with Dr. Sphinx Franklin. Please introduce yourself. Hi, Dr.
Hi, I'm Dr. Adia Sphinx Franklin. I am a board certified developmental behavioral pediatrician. I am associate professor of pediatrics at Baylor College of Medicine, and I see my patients at Texas Children's Hospital in Houston. I'm also a member of the Society for Developmental and Behavioral Pediatrics, which is the national organization of medical professionals that do the work that I do. So we evaluate and we care for children who have a variety of developmental disabilities and behavior disorders.
Thank you for that. So speaking on the behavioral side of things, which I know you're very familiar with, in terms of attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, ADHD, I know that I've been reading that a very common affective and symptom is a issue with like in social situations or like learning disabilities, anxiety, depression. So when you come across children or patients that have that, how do you really recommend that parents, teachers, and people around them handle that? Like, what's the best way to go about handling those issues?
So let's start with just defining what attention deficit hyperactivity disorder is. Is that okay? So, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, or ADHD is the acronym, is a neurodevelopmental disability that runs through families and people can be born with. There can be a number of genetic predispositions that increase the risk of somebody having ADHD if it runs through their families. There are also prenatal experiences that a person can have that can also increase their risk of developing ADHD, and there are some postnatal experiences as well. So, for example, if your parent has ADHD, then you have a 70% chance of having ADHD too.
Interesting.
If you were born, if you were exposed to alcohol, tobacco, or drugs prenatally, that can increase your risk of later developing ADHD. If you were born prematurely or born with a heart defect, those kinds of conditions can also increase your risk of developing ADHD. And ADHD is a neurological disorder that affects the dopamine system in the brain. And dopamine is very important for helping us do things like control how well we pay attention, control our activity level, control our impulses. And when you have ADHD, your brain cells do not produce and use dopamine appropriately. And people who have ADHD can have a lot of other conditions as well. So it is very common for people who have ADHD to have speech and language disorders, to have learning disabilities like problems learning to read or to perform math or to write and spell. It is also common for people with ADHD to have anxiety disorders where they worry excessively or become easily stressed or frustrated. Depression is also very common in people who have ADHD as well as tics. It's really common for people with ADHD to have tics, and these things are beyond their control. Now, in addition to those co-occurring conditions, that's what we call them, right? So you have ADHD and then another condition. The ADHD symptoms can really interfere with the person's social skills, which was your original question, right?
Yes.
And this is how social skills can be impacted by having ADHD. For one, because the person's brain is not very good at regulating how well they pay attention, that means, what do I concentrate on? What are the things that I can get distracted about? What can I tune in and tune out in my environment and in my own thoughts? So when interacting with another person, a person who has ADHD and interacting with a peer might not pay attention to that person's tone of voice or facial expressions. They may not notice how the person reacts to their own behavior. In addition to that, when you have ADHD, you struggle with your impulse control, right? Your self-control. So you act without thinking first, you speak without thinking first. So it's like ready, fire, aim instead of ready, aim, fire. So a person with ADHD might actually say something that is upsetting or offensive or hurtful to their friend, but because they're not paying attention, they may not notice that what they did was hurtful. And the last thing is with them being hyperactive and overly active, sometimes that annoys their friends. So, with them being impulsive and active, a person with ADHD is often the life of the party. So people are attracted to them and they can make friends, But maintaining and keeping friends and being a good friend is a big challenge. The last part of the equation is that individuals who have ADHD, children, teenagers, and adults are actually very socially immature compared to other people their age. So in maturity wise, you might be between 2 and 4 years younger. Maturity level, social emotional maturity compared to kids your age. So if you're 15 and your friends are 15, you might actually kind of be at the maturity level of like a 12-year-old. So if you're kind of acting like a 12-year-old in a 15-year-old body, that's going to also be a turnoff to peers. So there are many reasons why it's really hard for people with ADHD to maintain friendships. And then finally, people with ADHD tend to get into arguments with folks. So because they get into arguments and because they tend to be a little more argumentative than people without ADHD, they often have conflict with their peers and they have a harder time resolving conflict in such a way that repairs the relationship. And so all of these social skills factors actually lead people into adulthood. So then as adults, they have a harder time getting along with coworkers. They have a harder time following their boss's instructions, for example, getting along in romantic relationships. So those types of things can continue to follow somebody into adulthood. You asked me, what do we do to advise parents, right?
Yeah.
Well, once a child is diagnosed with ADHD, it's really important that parents begin to work on their social skills. And social skills is a really complicated process of abilities you have to properly interact with other human beings on the planet, right? But in short, I say, you got to teach your kid how to be a friend, make a friend, and keep a friend. That's the bottom line. So first, you know, you as a parent want to model good friendship behaviors. So parents have friends, very often parents' friends have kids that are about the same age as their kids. So then you're arranging times for your child with ADHD to play with and hang out with other kids their age. But you don't just let the kids go off on their own. There needs to be a little bit of coaching there. So one of the things we recommend is that part of the play time is spent with the adults and the kids together. And what you do is you play a game that has rules, like a card game or a board game, where there's turn taking, there's rules, there's strategies, somebody wins and somebody loses. So the adults are modeling all of these behaviors that you have when you play a game, right? So let's say you're playing Uno. Can you look at a person's face and tell if they're about to renege or they've got a good hand or they got a bad hand, if they're about to win or they're losing, right? Can you trash talk? Like learning how effective trash talk is a very American thing, right? And it's what we do. So how do you trash talk in a way that is friendly with your friends and not offensive? And how do you accept trash talk and not get your feelings hurt because we're just joking around? And then also, how do you win with grace? I won the game, but I'm not going to gloat and put you down because you didn't win. And how do I lose with grace? I lose and I don't get mad that I lost. I'm actually happy that you won because I had a good time, right? So you model that for part of the play date. And then the rest of the play date, you let the kids go off together. You allow children to resolve conflict, but if it sounds like the conflict is escalating to the point where the kids might actually start physically fighting, the adult needs to step in and help model and coach on how to resolve that conflict between peers. So, because that's something that people with ADHD really struggle with. And then there are books written for kids and for teenagers on good friendship skills and good social skills and good problem solving and social interactions. So there's a whole variety of things we can do to help people with ADHD with their social skills.
So it's important for like parents to not only to do a mix of giving independence, but also leading by example.
100%.
Okay. And you mentioned like coworkers and how ADHD and the effects of it can lead into adulthood. I've been reading that ADHD seems to like almost dissipate as you get as adult or in some cases. Can you explain, like, is that true or how many cases, like what case is that true?
Very, very good question. ADHD in general is a lifelong condition. However, anywhere between 30 to 50% of people, depending on the study you read, because different studies are done on different populations of people in the United States, right? So between 30 and 50% of people continue to have their full symptoms of ADHD when they are an adult, so that they have all the what we call criteria. So you remain hyperactive, you're still impulsive, you have a very hard time controlling what you pay attention to and get easily distracted all the way through adulthood. What the research has also found is that from the people who outgrow their symptoms and don't continue to have all three symptoms of ADHD in adulthood, they still struggle with something called executive functioning. Executive functioning is a whole process in the brain that in essence is planning, organizing, and executing a task, okay? We began to develop our executive functioning when we are infants. And executive functioning is fully matured in the brain when a woman is 25 years old and a man is about 30 years old. Isn't that amazing?
Oh yeah.
So it's something that develops over the course of your whole life, well into adulthood. However, for people who have ADHD, this is a lifelong challenge for them. They never fully develop their executive functioning skills. So what does that mean? Planning, organizing, executing. Well, if you've got to do some errands that day, can you figure out what your errands are and get all of the supplies you need to carry them out and do it in an organized manner? So let's just say you're going grocery shopping with your family, right? So in my household, when my kids were growing up, we put together a grocery list. Well, how do we make the grocery list? Well, we had to go through the pantry and the refrigerator and the freezer and the cabinets and see what do we need and what are we out of? And let's write it down. And then we go to the store and we follow the list. And before we go to the store, I make sure I have the coupons. I make sure I have the money to pay for the groceries. Does that make sense? Yeah. And if we're gonna pass the dry cleaners on the way to the grocery store, hey, let's go grab all the dry cleaning, put it in a bag so we can drop it off on the way to the grocery store, right? All of that planning that we do on a regular basis. So people with ADHD tend to be more impulsive and a lot more forgetful. So they're not gonna remember all of those steps. So they may say, oh my goodness, we're out of milk, and just run to the store, spend $100 on groceries, everything but the milk, right?
Yeah.
You also have a harder time with time management. So you might have difficulty meeting your friends on time. Like, who wants to show up to a movie late, right? But if one of the friends in the friendship group has ADHD, they're often late to the movies. They have a harder time keeping their commitments, which means in adulthood, they have a harder time showing up to work on time. Money management is hard because that requires being planning and being organized and being careful and methodical and keeping track of how much money you have. So you tend to see people with ADHD having more issues with financial concerns because they're more likely to overspend, lose their money, not keep track of how much they spent, paying attention to things. Does that make sense? So that is the executive functioning that if a person was diagnosed with ADHD as a kid, they continue to have those kinds of issues all the way through life. These are the people who have the incomplete projects. They have a hard time finishing what they start. They start painting the wall in the bathroom, and then all of a sudden, squirrel, they go and fix a chair. But you didn't finish painting the bathroom wall, Paw. Like, that's like, that is like grandpa's got ADHD, bless his heart. So those are the kinds of things you see in adulthood. Now, some folks with ADHD actually recognize what their struggles are, and they come up with really good systems to keep themselves organized. So these are people that tend to like write things down and use checklists, or they use a calendar or voice memos on their phone, or, you know, they do things in a very systematic way because they realize that if they don't do it in that way, they're not going to be as successful.
It's going to be, ADHD is lifelong, but in ways as you grow up and gain a maturity, the effects of it can decrease in some respects.
And in continue in others, absolutely. Yeah. So you might not be as hyperactive as an adult as you were as a kid, right? You might not be as impulsive as you were when you were a kid, but you're still gonna be disorganized. You're still gonna be forgetful. You're still gonna lose things. You're gonna have a hard time finishing what you start. You have a hard time even knowing where to get started. You gotta go clean the garage. A person with poor executive functioning doesn't even know where to start the task.
So it's very important to teach executive functioning
That's right. And so there are a number of activities that parents can do with their children to teach them executive functioning. So one simple thing, rule that like my grandma had and my mother had as I was a kid, everything has a place and there's a place for everything. That is executive functioning. So you're, you know, there's one place in the house, everybody hangs their keys. There's a place in the house where everybody puts their shoes. Everybody's backpack goes in this place. Where do you keep your toothbrush, right? So keeping kind of things in an organized, systematic manner. What are the steps for getting dressed in the morning? Do you need kind of pictures or checklists to remind you of the steps of getting dressed? You don't forget to brush your teeth every day and your teeth don't fall out your head. When you're cleaning your room, what does it mean to clean your room? Well, maybe you need a checklist of the five things it takes to clean your room. Or you can say, well, let me start picking up all the red stuff. Then I'm gonna pick up all the blue things. And then I'm gonna pick up all the green things and all the yellow things until my room is clean. So that you, that your parents are teaching you kind of a systematic way of doing things. Because that person with poor executive functioning and ADHD first has to have external supports from their families and their teachers. And eventually they start learning their own systems for helping them keep track.
So on like a bit of a different note, you mentioned that ADHD can, the dopamine hormone is altered or there's a less of it in people with ADHD. So I was researching, so common treatments for ADHD are stimulants usually. Mm-hmm. So what do stimulants do?
So stimulants are medicines such as Ritalin and Adderall. Those are the two main categories of stimulants. We have had Ritalin, the chemical name for Ritalin is methylphenidate. That is the actual name of the active ingredient. And that has been around since like the 1950s. So it's a well-studied medicine. And then the Adderall family of medicines are amphetamine salts. So they are amphetamine derivatives that are very highly controlled, very small doses, and those have been well studied as well. Now, the way the methylphenidates and the amphetamine salts work in the brain is this. When you've got ADHD, your brain plays a game of telephone. So one brain cell makes the dopamine and secretes it to pass it to the next brain cell. But instead of allowing that dopamine to pass to the next brain cell, the first brain cell immediately recycles most of it. So only a little bit of that dopamine gets to the next brain cell. And then that brain cell releases the dopamine, recycles most of it, and very little gets there. So if you think about the message, think about the game telephone. You know how you start the message with the first person and by the end of the line, it's a completely different message, right? So if you tell a person with ADHD something, like your dad tells you, all right, go to your room, turn the light off and close the door. Okay, that message goes through your ears into the hearing center of your brain. And then it's supposed to go to all of the regions of the brain that help you carry out that simple command. Go to your room, turn off the light and close the door. But because your brain is recycling the dopamine so fast, the signal gets interrupted by something else. Squirrel, my favorite cartoon is on TV, right? Yeah. Right? Oh, the dog is outside. I'm going to run outside and play with the dog. I just saw the dog. That is exactly what. So you like never go to your room. You never turn off the light and you never close the door. Did you do that on purpose? No, the signal got interrupted because neurobiologically, that's what's happening. Mm-hmm. So the way the Ritalin family of medicines and the Adderall family of medicines is to stop the recycling process in the brain. So that when a brain cell makes the dopamine, the next brain cell gets the dopamine, and then the next brain cell and the next brain cell. So then when I say to you, go to your room, turn off light and close the door, the signal makes it to all the areas of the brain that it takes for you to carry out that instruction without getting interrupted. Okay. And so the research for decades has shown that these medicines are very effective in treating the biology of ADHD. They are not a cure, it is a treatment. Does that make sense? Because again, this is a lifelong condition. We don't have a cure for these types of lifelong conditions. So it actually helps to manage the biology of the disorder while the medicine is in your system. But it is not the only thing you do to help a person with ADHD. They actually require really good behavior supports. So that's why you work on social skills and you work on executive functioning and you work on problem solving and all of these things that the person needs. So some folks have, for example, a psychologist. They work with a psychologist or another type of mental health professional that specializes in helping kids with ADHD. And then at school, for folks who have ADHD that struggle with learning in school, they get extra help and services in school. For those who have speech and language problems, they get speech and language therapy. If you struggle with handwriting and fine motor skills, you get occupational therapy. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So you have a comprehensive approach to treating ADHD just like you would for asthma. If you gave somebody asthma medicine, but everybody in the house kept smoking around them and you had like 40 cats in your house, would the asthma get better?
No,
because you're living in a household full of cigarette smoke and cats, which both make your asthma worse. It doesn't matter how many times you take the medicine. So it has to be a comprehensive plan to help the asthma get better. You got to do stuff besides only give the person medicine. So you got to put the cats outside and get rid of all the cat dander and vacuum and dust. And people have to only smoke outside. They cannot smoke in the house. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Then the house is better and easier for that person to breathe in. It's the same thing for ADHD. It has to be a full comprehensive system of support to help that person live their best lives.
Okay, so that's very interesting. So I was researching more treatments and I found that non-stimulants have also been approved, like Qelbree. So what are non-stimulants and why are they, like, how do they work compared to like stimulants?
Very good. So non-stimulants are other categories of medicines that have been approved by the Food and Drug Administration. And through years and years of research, they have found that these medicines also reduce the core symptoms of ADHD, which is the hyperactivity, the impulsivity, and being easily distracted. These are medicines that work in the brains in different ways. They work differently. The stimulants, which are methylphenidate and the amphetamine salts, work specifically and primarily on dopamine, right? Okay, well, the non-stimulants actually are different kinds of medicines. So there are some non-stimulants that work on the sympathetic nervous system. There are other non-stimulants that work on the serotonin system. Some work on the norepinephrine system. So they're working on different parts of the brain to address your attention, your activity level, and your impulse control. And those medicines aren't as effective in treating ADHD symptoms as the stimulants are, but some kids actually just do better with them. They have fewer side effects, or some of them can treat more than one condition. So let's say, for example, a person has ADHD and oppositional defiant disorder, then they actually might do better with certain types of non-stimulants like clonidine. So you've got clonidine, which helps with the core ADHD symptoms, but it can also help with some of that aggressiveness that you see with opposition defiant disorder, where people are very argumentative and a lot more defiant. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
If a person has ADHD with anxiety, there is a medicine called Strattera or atomoxetine. Atomoxetine is the chemical name for Strattera. Well, that is a medicine that actually helps with ADHD symptoms and anxiety symptoms together. So there's some kids who have both that actually do fairly well with Strattera. But this is something that you've got to work with your prescribing doctor to figure out, okay, what is the best medicine for me, for my body, and for my symptoms?
Oh, so it's very personalized.
Absolutely. There is no one size fits all because everybody's brain is different. So even though ADHD can look very similar and very, very different in people across the board, the way your body is going to respond to medicines is going to be different than maybe the way somebody else's body responds to medicines, right?
Yeah. So my final question for you is, I know you talked about this, that you discussed how when we use treatments and stuff like that, you for ADHD, there's still many other factors that have to come into play to help relieve the effects of it, of ADHD. But is a cure ever foreseeable?
That is a really good question, and I don't know of any. In all of the groups that I work with, ADHD is one of those conditions that we help people manage the symptoms, right? It's about managing the condition, right? So just like there's some people who outgrow their asthma and some people who don't. So there's no cure for asthma, but some people outgrow it, but they might still have a few things that might irritate them, right? So, you know, it might not be as bad as it was when you were a kid, but you say, you know what, I'm gonna stay away from this one thing because I'm not gonna own a cat, because I notice when I'm around a cat, I start feeling a little wheezy in the chest. So with ADHD, it's sort of like that. It's more of managing the symptoms over the course of your life. There are so many incredibly successful people in the world who have ADHD. And it is because of the comprehensive supports that they received from their families and their schools and their doctors and community that really helped them to get to that point.
Really interesting. I really appreciated you coming here today to explain all this. I mean, I definitely learned a lot. So, thank you so much for doing this. I hope everyone learned a lot from just listening to this.
You are very welcome. Can I give one resource where people can go to learn more?
Oh, sure. Yeah, please.
There is a website called CHADD, C-H-A-D-D. It is Children and Adults with Attention Deficit Hyperactivity Disorder. chadd.org. That is a wonderful website for teenagers to go to and parents and other folks to learn about ADHD, and they have accurate, up-to-date health information. You've got to be careful about what you're reading because there's a lot of information on the internet and much of it is pseudoscience or false science. You got to be cautious. So always stick with the sources that are scientifically valid, where physicians and scientists and researchers are writing the articles and making sure that the information is up to date and accurate.
Okay, yeah, thank you so much. And I'll definitely be checking out that source, and I encourage everyone to do that.